Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Ask Governor Meyer. I'm Shirley Min. This evening is a chance for Delawareans to hear directly from their governor and ask questions in real time. Our show is produced by WHYY and Delaware Public Media, with editorial independence from the governor's office. We alone prepared the questions and topics, and our producers will be screening calls for clarity and relevance only. We welcome the diverse opinions of our audience. With me in our Philadelphia studio once again is Delaware Governor Matt Meyer. Governor Meyer, thanks for being here this
evening.
Hi, Shirley.
It's good to be here.
We are also joined by two journalists who will add their questions to the mix. Sarah Mueller is the Delaware politics reporter at WHYY News, and Tom Byrne is Delaware Public Media's news director. So welcome to you both.
Thanks so much. Shirley.
We're going to move through a series of topics this hour, and now is the time for audience members to join in on the conversation. You can call 1-888-477-9499. You can email askgovmeyer at whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop your comment in the chat. So, Governor, I want to start tonight's show on the topic of immigration.
Shirley, can I just say a quick thing before we start? And that is, a few days after my last appearance here, last month, there was a state trooper who was working an extra duty shift at a division of motor vehicles in right outside Wilmington, who was ambushed and, and killed. He was just working an extra shift to support his family, his wife, and his young daughter. And a reminder, his name is Corporal Ty Snook, passed away. His service, his heroism is a reminder to all of us of those sacrificing every day across our state, putting on the law enforcement uniform to keep us safe. And I just wanted to express to Delawareans and to listeners, just to be reminded that there are individuals right now during the show who are out there with uniform on in the coldest of temperatures, in the iciest of roads, working hard to keep us safe. And let's keep them in our thoughts and prayers, keep their safety so that they can all get home safely.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Governor. Do you want to start on the topic of immigration? So this is an issue that is top of mind for many in light of the events that are unfolding in Minneapolis. Just today, the Delaware State Senate spent 2 hours debating a resolution that expressed outrage over DHS tactics like the lethal use of force and called for transparency and accountability. But last week in your State of the State address, you said little about immigration issues, and that caught the attention of State Rep. Medina Wilson-Anton. She's a Democrat from Newcastle County. Let's hear it.
So I was actually initially very excited by the State of the State. I was disappointed, though, to see a glaring omission from his speech, which is immigrants. And unfortunately, it was, I think, one sentence in his speech that was very vague about vulnerable communities and doing what's right, but nothing specific.
Governor, what do you have to say to Representative Wilson-Anton and others who wanted to hear more from you specifically about what you feel the state can do to protect its immigrant community?
Our first draft of the State of the State was about 2.5 hours long, and the primary concern was we'd put you, Tom, Sarah, Shirley, and Representative Wilson-Anton to sleep if we read that draft of the speech. The reality is you got to cut some things out. We made a decision to focus primarily on legislative issues. That should not be interpreted in any way as us losing focus on immigration. In fact, it's pretty interesting that Representative Wilson-Anton is criticizing our administration on immigration, because a few months ago, my very first veto as governor was Senate Bill 63, which concerns wage theft, which is an issue, enabling our Department of Labor to enforce wage theft laws, not just against subcontractors or wage theft, but the contractors who are hiring the subcontractors. We heard from many Latino contractors and organizations representing Latino contractors that while this may be a good piece of legislation, this is not the time to empower our Department of Labor with enforcement capabilities against more Latino businesses. As has been widely reported in the press, since almost my first day as governor a year ago, ICE has been coming after our State Department of Labor. I have pledged to Delawareans that we will protect everyone residing in our state. Delaware is a place where American dreams come true, regardless of where you are from. I vetoed that piece of legislation. And it was overridden
just yesterday
by many of these individuals mm-hmm. who are criticizing that this thing wasn't mentioned in them. I'd love it if they had the same courage in their votes that they had in going to the press to criticize
me. Well, let's talk a little bit about some legislation and other issues associated with immigration. Last year, lawmakers passed and you signed legislation barring law enforcement agencies from entering into agreements with federal immigration enforcement authorities to enforce immigration violations. But recently, Spotlight Delaware reported that Laurel Police compiled a list of information regarding the location of people perceived to be Haitians living in the Laurel area, supplied that information, including home addresses, to the FBI. Do you have concerns about that?
Absolutely.
And is there some legislative fix to that? Can you do something like you did last year to address this type of situation outside of immigration enforcement?
So it's a local police agency. So there's a challenge. First of all, it's not under my direct jurisdiction mm-hmm. as governor. I did sign a piece of legislation that I believe strongly in, banning 287G agreements, which mm-hmm. bar certain cooperation
right.
between every police agency in Delaware and ICE. This incident occurred that the information was transmitted, I believe, in February or January, mm-hmm. before February of last year, before this legislation was signed or in effect. Listen, ICE right now is clearly an entity that's showing no respect for due process. They're using our tax dollars to go after American citizens. It's a police agency without limits or guardrails. Our police, our Delaware State Police, our Newcastle County Police and municipal police departments go through extensive training on bias, on de-escalation, on understanding when there's a violent incident, how do you make sure it becomes a non-violent incident? Training that it's clear that ICE agents either are not undergoing or are not taking seriously, and people are dying as a result. That kind of policing has absolutely no place in Delaware. We're doing everything in our power to make sure things like what happened with the Laurel police chief never happen again.
Okay, so one more question before we leave immigration and immigration enforcement. Last month on Ask Governor Meyer, you said that you personally felt uncomfortable flying on Avelo Airlines because of its contract with ICE. So
I said I would not fly on Avelo.
You would not, right.
Absolutely.
After months of protests at the Wilmington Airport, Avelo Airlines has cut ties with ICE, but activists are now concerned by a new company, Sarah.
Daedalus Aviation, a company that just signed a $140 million deal selling planes to ICE, is now seeking to lease space at the Wilmington Airport. Activists are urging the Delaware River and Bay Authority, a Delaware, New Jersey government agency, not to approve the lease. You have seen the resolution. Do you think it's moral for the state of Delaware to profit from a business making hundreds of millions of dollars selling planes for ICE deportations?
So Daedalus has committed, not in the lease, but verbally to, and I think publicly, to use the Wilmington Airport facility for VIP transports, not for deportation transports. Number one, that absolutely has to be in any lease. It needs to be in writing. Now, understand, there is FAA regulations and federal rules and laws that govern the leasing of space on that airport. And the things I'm saying could possibly run afoul of federal law. Nevertheless, I think it's a serious enough situation. It's a time when we as leaders in our country need to stand up and say, this is absolutely not appropriate the way ICE is conducting itself. And so I am willing to stick my neck out and say that Daedalus must commit at the very least to not using any facility on Wilmington Airport to be involved in deportation in any way.
Avelo Airlines was not doing deportation flights in Delaware, but it was still a big issue and there was still a lot of protests. And you said that you would not fly them because mm-hmm. of those deportation flights.
Right.
But you're saying that this is okay as long as they say we won't do anything.
I didn't say it was okay.
What are you saying?
You can get into details about the. So we could say we're not working with Daedalus at all, right? Which is my inclination. Which would cause serious legal problems for the airport in a number of ways. And in addition, it creates a problem that if we could go through, there's a lot of things the Trump administration is doing wrong right now. I think every company contributing to the nonsense going on with the East Wing of the White House is terrible. If we start boycotting every company involved in this, we're going to get to a point where there aren't that many. We're only going to be working with small businesses, which might not be a bad thing if we only work with Delaware small business. But you see what I'm saying? There are a lot of sizable companies now working with the Trump administration. And I'm open to saying, OK, if we're going to start doing boycotts of any companies involved with certain policies of the Trump administration we don't believe in, let's have an open and honest conversation about what the line is, what companies we're going to boycott and not boycott.
So it's okay to take money from them.
I didn't say that, like Sarah. I said if we're going to have a boycott, if we're saying we're boycotting any company that works with ICE, then we honestly, and we need to look through what are every company working with ICE, and let's make sure we have a full, that not a single penny of state money is going to work with any ICE, any entity doing any business with ICE. Because a lot more than just Daedalus, there's probably a lot of companies that you and I see every day.
Okay, we're going to move on here. Governor Meyer, one issue we've gotten a lot of listener questions about is the cost of energy. So over the past 6 years, average electricity prices have risen faster than inflation in Delaware. And I can speak from personal experience where my most recent bill, Governor, I've paid the most I have ever paid since living in Delaware over the past 15 years. Last week, you gave your State of the State address, and some of the loudest applause came when you called out the utility company, Delmarva Power. So let's listen to that.
Rate increases far beyond inflation are unacceptable. Delmarva's out-of-state shareholders should not take advantage of Delaware's families who are working to make ends meet. We must hold these monopolies accountable.
So, Governor, what power do you actually have to stop Delmarva Power from taking advantage of customers?
So there's legal power and there's the power of the pulpit that as governor, I can bring Delmarva to the table and make sure they do the right thing. There's an interesting dynamic now where Delmarva is not the only utility operating in Delaware. There's DEC and DMEC, the Delaware Electric Cooperative and Delaware Electricity Municipal Cooperative, as well as municipal utility providers. Their energy rates of those municipalities, DEC, DMEC, their rates are not increasing anywhere near at the levels that Delmarva's rates aren't increasing. Delmarva is a monopoly. It's a for-profit company. They expect a rate of return for their out-of-state shareholders, and they're getting that return off the backs of Delawareans, and we're going to fight hard to make sure through the Public Service Commission, through legal means, that we can limit Delmarva's ability to keep imposing rate hikes and these delivery fees, sometimes in excess of usage fees, that are really hitting Delawareans hard.
You've called for the Delaware Public Service Commission to reject future rate hike requests. The commissioners are appointed by the governor. However, to date, you've only appointed one. How will you convince these holdover commissioners to do as you ask?
Well, I mean, last year, thanks to the leadership of Senator Stephanie Hansen and other legislators, we changed the legal standard they can use. They can use a more rigorous legal standard now to evaluate rate hikes. And if we're not getting the right answer for Delaware consumers, we'll continue to fight. Listen, this is a monopoly. When you go to the store and you choose which milk to buy, if a milk is too expensive or didn't taste right the last time, you can simply move to another brand. If the brands you like aren't in one supermarket, you can go to another supermarket. With electricity, Delawareans can't do that. The utility provider is a monopoly. You can't move. The only line of protection is the Public Service Commission. It's our government, and we must be held accountable, and we must do everything to hold Delmarva's feet to the fire, and not just doing everything to maximize profits, not just doing everything to provide energy resiliency to make sure power doesn't go down, but also taking seriously affordability for every Delaware family.
Well, Governor, I want to read a listener question now because this is kind of along the lines of what we're talking about. Peter from Kent County asks, in view of today's extreme electric bills, why can't I switch from Delmarva to Delaware Electric Co-op to reduce my electric cost? And he writes, when I spoke with a DEC rep, she stated that Delmarva and DEC have an agreement to, quote, stay out of each other's territory. So it's very frustrating. So, Governor, can you tell us quickly, why aren't there more options for Peter? I mean, I know you're saying there's the utilities have a monopoly, mm-hmm. but so why with not these other options, why can't
It's a very good question, he Peter. Changed. I appreciate that. There are lines that run outside Peter's house. Those lines are owned by Delmarva. So if Peter wanted DEC to provide, the Delaware Electricity Cooperative, to provide power instead of Delmarva, DEC would have to purchase the Delmarva lines outside Peter's house, and presumably all of his neighbors would have to switch over. Delmarva would have to agree to sell those lines to DEC. DEC is corporate strategy, would have to want to buy those lines. And of course, then you say, well, you didn't create competition. You just created another monopoly. Then the monopoly would be with DEC. So the issue is, we could have a system where there are three or four or five different power lines running side by side. That's not the system we have in Delaware and most of the country right now.
Okay, on the subject of the energy cost crisis, one thing that you did not mention at all in your State of the State address was AI data centers, but proposed data centers like Project Washington in Newcastle County, they've caused quite a stir in the first state, with residents concerned about their effect on rising utility costs, as well as noise and environmental impacts. So this week, lawmakers are looking at two bills to regulate data centers. Tom, tell us what's on the docket.
So Shirley, we'll start with the one which would require businesses using 30 megawatts of electricity or more, like a data center, to first get a certificate to operate from the Delaware Public Service Commission, which we talked about. PSC would look at whether the regional grid can handle their needs, the impact on ratepayers in the state, and if the facility is aligned with the state's renewable energy goals. The other bill would require utilities like Delmarva Power, who we were just talking about, to establish a separate rate for large energy use facilities that would help keep ratepayers from absorbing costs associated with the data center. So we'll just start with the basic question of, if these bills pass, would you sign them? Do you support them?
So with data centers, with large energy users, any, whether it's a data center or anything else, my standard is, number one, when you come into our state or set up a facility, you cannot increase electric rates on regular Delaware consumers, working families, by one penny. If what you're doing is increasing rates by one penny, we are doing something wrong. So that means you need to bring your own power, or that means we need to charge you for the actual cost of the system of drawing that extra power. That's the first thing.
These bills get this.
And that's true of environmental sustainability as well. Right. You can't take all our water. There's a lot of water usage for cooling. You're not going to take all our water and make our communities not environmentally sustainable or create environmental harm to neighboring communities to any data center. In terms of the specific bills, to be frank, there's some – I like to watch the legislative discussion. I like to hear advocates come and argue for and against a bill and then make a decision. I have some concern about the first bill you referenced. The I think it's 30 megawatt threshold.
Yeah.
Seems low. We don't want to unnecessarily burden power users that actually aren't that large. You have like Christiana Hospital, right? Our largest hospital. Their hospital facility, I believe, is the largest single facility user of generators, backup generators, in the state, and they have four. Project Washington, their proposal is to have over 500 electric generators. So we have to make sure that the line we draw is really for those
mega users.
So two
things real quick. So it's not a no, but not a yes on these bills. Like
I'm very the additional cost for large load, I absolutely agree with. We can get into details about what that should be. My standard is that a large load user coming in should not cause any Delaware family to pay an extra penny in energy costs.
So real quick, a lot of states are grappling with this right now. You know, Wisconsin, Virginia, Georgia. In Georgia, there's actually one proposal floating out there about a moratorium on data centers to give state and local governments a chance to kind of sort off everything out. Would you support something like that, just putting a moratorium in until all these things are sorted out?
We'll look at that. I'm not a big fan of moratoriums generally because they impede economic development. I think we need to move quickly. We need to find solutions, and we need to say, if you're going to do this, here are the costs incurred. Here are the safeguards you need to make. I don't think it should take us years and years to come up with that.
But does a moratorium protect against some of the unintended consequences you were talking about? like with Christiana Care, for example.
Christiana Care,
like finding that right like megawatt level, so you don't affect something like Christiana Care when you're targeting data centers.
I don't think it's that hard to come up with an increased megawatt level if you look at the megawatt usage of various large users.
I'm going to stop it right here because coming up in just a few minutes, we want to get to the rest of the show and the other questions. We're going to press Governor Meyer on issues including property reassessment and affordability, and then we invite you to join the conversation. So call 888-477-9499. You can email askgovmeyer@whyy.org, or if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, just leave us a comment in the chat. We will be right back with more Ask Governor Meyer. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Mitt. Governor Matt Meyer is taking questions from WHYY's Sarah Mueller and Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne, and from you, our audience. To add your voice to the conversation, call 888-477-9499, email askgovmeyer@whyy.org, or leave a comment in the chat if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook. Okay, Governor, we talked a little bit about rising costs to residents in the first segment. So now I want to talk about another area where Delawareans are feeling the financial squeeze, property reassessment. The court-ordered effort to update decades-old property values to address education funding equity hit some bumps in the road. Homes and business owners all over Delaware have complained about sticker shock. The residents of Newcastle County have been particularly frustrated by the uneven consequences of reassessment. Now, two new bills seek to address that. So for our listeners, Tom, can you tell us what's up for debate?
So we'll roll through these real quick. One of these bills gives Newcastle County's Office of Finance power to go back and review some non-residential property values, correct some errors found, if they find them. The second would allow counties to ask businesses to open their books if the county is using income to assess their property's fair market value. Where do you stand on these two bills to try and get at some of these complaints about reassessment and its impact?
The first one passed today.
Yes.
And so it's coming to my desk. I was county executive for 8 years. The county already has this power. Kent and Sussex County has already used this power. So I got to decide what to do with the bill that I think is passed but doesn't really change law. If you look at the discussion, even by the sponsors on the floor of the House, the record reflects that there's already law indicating they can do that. So I got a philosophical decision. What do you do when a law passes for something that's already legal? The second one concerning subpoena power, I think it makes sense for assessors to be able to have the best information in making decisions.
Both bills, as you mentioned, received some pushback from GOP lawmakers, particularly in their case for how quickly they moved. Mm-hmm. The bill asking about subpoena power for businesses producing their records got this response from State Senator Brian Pettyjohn. Let's listen to that.
Why are we going to go ahead and really go in and subpoena the books of a company for real estate purposes? I have a problem with just the, and it's not really the state, it's a governmental entity coming in inspecting books just for that reason.
How do you respond to Senator
Pettyjohn? Well, I mean, we all the time, when you file your income taxes, if the IRS has any questions about the accuracy of the information you file, they can subpoena the information because you have an obligation to provide accurate information so that the state or the country, the taxing authority, can give you an accurate number. So I'm not terribly concerned about that. I think taxing authorities need to do the right thing to get the accurate information. In many cases, a subpoena may help a business to get accurate information about the income it's taken in so it can accurately value the property.
We're going to move on to another issue impacting affordability. In 2024, the Diamond State Hospital Cost Review Board was signed into law by former Governor John Carney. And this was in an effort to rein in hospital spending and keep healthcare costs down. Christiana Care Health System, Delaware's largest non-governmental employer, promptly sued the state, calling the review board draconian. You recently worked with Christiana Care to settle the lawsuit through legislation that would strip the board of its authority to approve and modify hospital budgets.
Well, you skipped a step, Shirley. That Christiana Care sued, and a judge ruled on, I think, one of the six allegations and basically signaled that Christiana Care would likely win and find that the law was unconstitutional. And therefore, we could continue litigation for years and continue holding board meetings and paying for a board when the very existence of the board was in legal doubt or legal question, wasting public resources and creating even more havoc in our healthcare and a healthcare pricing system. Or we could sit down with Christiana Care, with the plaintiff, and say, let's come to some resolution so we can truly, as a state, come together and focus on healthcare accessibility and affordability.
Well, so it was settled. Some senators have complained that they were left out of the settlement talks. State Senator Spiros Mansivinos talked about this last week. He's a Newcastle County Democrat. So let's take a listen.
The press release that was issued by the governor's office, where it says the agreement signed by Governor Meyer and Dr. Nevin addresses legislative solutions to the current HB 350 law and shows collaboration between the two parties. Well, we're a party and we're not in this.
Why did legislative leaders, especially those in your own party, not have more input in drafting those settlements?
First of all, the legislation you're talking about passed the House and the Senate. Yeah. The settlement agreement passed and
but
is coming
we're talking
to my
about
desk.
What Senator Mansivinos
said. I find that when very often when people don't agree with the substance of a bill and they're not right, they go after the process. Our process was fine. We had an obligation to deliver affordability and accessible care to Delawareans. This, because of the mess of House Bill 350, that it was in courts, we were looking at years and years of wasted taxpayer resources, of wasted time paying for lawyers rather than working on pharmaceutical drug prices that are cheaper, rather than working on getting physicians and nurses trained to communities that need them. We decided to focus on that to make sure we work with legislators, as we did, to get this settlement that was proposed passed through the House and the Senate. If they had problems with it, they would have amended it as they could through the legislative process. They chose not to do it. I'll be signing that bill in the next few days.
Why not bring legislators into it, though? Just at least say what you're doing. Kind of get them
in
on the game.
Legislators were informed. We don't. There are 62 legislators. Often when legislators say that, they're not saying you didn't include any legislators. They're saying you didn't include me.
Why was it appropriate for your office and Christiana Care to develop this agreement, especially with your wife employed with Christiana Care?
Was it a
conflict of interest?
I was the defendant. And first of all, to suggest that there's any conflict of interest with my wife is an emergency room doctor. When you have something awful happen and go to the emergency room, she is focused on one thing, and that is the Hippocratic Oath, making sure you get out of that emergency room as quickly as possible and survive. That's the first thing. The second thing is, the truth is, I didn't have any direct involvement in this settlement. We hired an outside firm that negotiated this, presented it to me. I made no changes, and they presented it to the legislature with legislative leaders informed every step of the way.
Okay, we've got time for one more question here before we go to a break. So we're going to talk Wilmington. This month, three city council members announced a plan to address affordability. Here's Councilwoman Shanae Darby.
Rent stabilization is still a priority of mine because it helps family plan. It prevents sudden displacement. It keeps long-term residents in their homes.
Last year, Wilmington City Council tried and failed to pass a rent stabilization ordinance. Now these council members and housing advocates are trying to pass a voter referendum where residents will decide at the ballot box. Do you support those efforts?
I think localities, every housing market's a little bit different across the state. I encourage localities to come up with creative solutions. There are some concerns with rent stabilization that we hear from affordable housing developers, that when they're choosing between building, say, in Wilmington or Newark or unincorporated Newcastle County, if Wilmington has a rent stabilization laws, there are going to be a lot fewer affordable housing developers that choose to build in Wilmington because there's more opportunity to build in unincorporated Newcastle County. And in Newark, there's some data that indicates that's accurate. There's some data that indicates it's not accurate. Just as there's, they like to say, the states are a laboratory of experimentation for the country. There are 50 different states that have different policies on all sorts of things. I like to look at Delaware that same way, that if one municipality or several municipalities want to take a different approach, like rent stabilization, and the people of that municipality support it, the people of Wilmington hold a referendum and they support it, then they should do it. And I'm eager to see whether that actually results in higher quality and more affordable housing for the people of Wilmington.
Governor, we're going to take a call from Nick from Wilmington. Nick, what's your question? And thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. Good evening, Governor Meyer.
Good evening.
Hey, so really my question goes back to what was being discussed earlier regarding immigration enforcement. So during your tenure as county executive, there was a marked increase in the number of automated license plate readers across Newcastle County. And so what I've seen is that a lot of these cameras are being used in tracking both immigrants and protesters in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. So given how this technology can be turned around and weaponized against, you know, law-abiding people, what is your plan to dismantle the system in Newcastle County and Delaware as a whole?
Yeah, Nick, I appreciate the question. I would first tell you that I would not compare in any way, shape, or form the policing tactics used by Newcastle County Police or our state police or any police agency in Delaware with the police tactics and technology used by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, by federal ICE. They are, in so many instances, I believe, misusing technology, using technology without respect to civil liberties, due process rights, without respect to probable cause, and the wealth of constitutional and statutory protections that have been developed over really centuries in our country. So that's the first thing. I think there needs to be a balance in using these technologies. License plate readers is a good example. Just in New England, in Rhode Island, and in Massachusetts, there was a shooting at Brown University, murder of two students, followed by the murder of a professor. And they had very few leads, and the license plate reader was extremely helpful in identifying the suspect and making sure that the public was safe. In that instance, a license plate reader seems to make a lot of sense. And a lot of the instances that Nick mentioned being used in Minneapolis, it's absolutely intolerable. The key is to make sure that there's a respect for rule of law, there's a respect for civil liberties, and the police are actually working for the people and the principles on which we stand, and not vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Nick, great question. Thank you so much for calling in. In just a moment, we're going to ask Delaware Governor Matt Meyer to explain the budget proposal he laid out earlier today in Dover. And you still have a chance to make your voice heard. Call 888-477-9499, email askgovmeyer@whyy.org, and again, leave your comment in the chat if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook. This is Ask Governor Meyer. You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Min. With me are reporters Tom Byrne and Sarah Mueller, and of course, Delaware Governor Matt Meyer. If you have questions for the governor, send them to askgovmeyer@whyy.org, or better yet, give us a call, 888-477-9499. So now let's turn to business and economic development in Delaware. Sarah, take it away.
Last year, you told the Delaware Chamber of Commerce that it was short-sighted to drive economic development using taxpayer funds. Now, your administration has signed off on one of the largest taxpayer-backed incentives in state history, a $30 million grant to biopharmaceutical giant Merck to build a $1 billion campus near Wilmington. Why the sudden change?
Yeah, I don't think it's a change. Listen, what I've always said is that the way to grow an economy is to have the best education system, the highest quality of life, to be a place where people want to start and grow new technologies and new innovations and grow their companies and stay. It's not through taxpayer incentives. That's not the way to grow an economy. Now, there are certain instances where in biopharmaceuticals, for example, where we have a certain advantage in Delaware. We have a few leading technologies, companies that have been designed and built in Delaware. Insight, Prelude Therapeutics, a number of DuPont technologies and others. When a company like Merck comes and there's an opportunity to get $1 billion investment, that was a deal that my predecessor negotiated. The deal, the ink was pretty much not dry. And I said, we're going to follow through with this because it's going to be good for Delaware. There are other investments, WuXi Pharmaceuticals in Middletown, that we've stood up and committed that, yes, these are deals we're going to follow through on because they can be good for Delaware. You've already seen us start to turn our economic development attention to entrepreneurs, to growing companies. We've partnered with 48 small, fast-growing companies just in my first year in office, making sure they have the seed funding and support. Much less expensive. It's sort of like instead of putting all your eggs in the Merck basket, and Merck, they're a great company that we're hoping will remain committed to Delaware. It sounds like they're committed to Delaware, but they have commitment in a lot of places. These are 48 companies that are deeply committed to Delaware with much less investment. We think if one or two of, or five of them grow into anything like a Merck, it'll be a home run for Delawareans.
The Delaware Prosperity Partnership is a private public partnership and therefore not subject to Delaware's Freedom of Information Act. That means a lot of these big business deals are kept secret from the public until they're nearly across the finish line. Do you think it should be subject to FOIA laws?
I think any public expenditure, like the commitment to Merck you spoke of, other commitments to small business, every step of that process is certainly open to FOIA and open to public exposure. What we don't want, there are private companies that are coming to the table and investing, and many of those private companies, for good reason and sometimes for a legal reason, can't have all of their books and all of their internal dialogue open to the same laws and rules that apply to me and to state offices. So I think that's right.
Okay, moving on. So busy day for you and both Tom and Sarah. But earlier today, you presented your FY 2027 budget plan. Sarah, let's start with you.
We got a listener question from Mark in Newark who asked how you are planning on making Delaware affordable when he says all we see is rising costs. You've talked a lot about affordability, but in today's budget proposal, you are raising business formation fees and cigarette taxes on top of last year's hikes of tolls and DMV fees. What do you say about Delawareans worried about rising costs?
Well, if you don't smoke, right? First of all, I'd argue that an increase in tobacco taxes are actually not an increase in taxes for most Delawareans. And in fact, it could be a reduction because if fewer people choose to smoke, that's a savings in healthcare that we'll realize across our system. So tobacco is interesting because the more people that use tobacco, the worse it is for our healthcare system, and it increases the cost of healthcare. Listen, we're taking dramatic steps in healthcare, in housing, in childcare, and as we talked about, in energy to bring down cost. I've been adamant in my State of the Union, we could very quickly turn on a 1.7 gigawatt energy generator right off the shore of Delaware and Maryland, and that's the U.S. wind project. We've spoken already about the things we're doing to hold Delmarva's feet to the fire. We have a dramatic, nearly $50 million investment to bring down childcare costs, to dramatically increase the availability of childcare in our state. And we're making tremendous investments, not just in housing and in the affordability of housing. We're also changing the market. One third of the cost today, about one third of the cost of building a new home, have nothing to do with putting a shovel in the ground. It's the soft costs, the zoning, rezoning, and all sorts of pre-engineering. We're doing everything we can to reduce that regulatory burden so that cost comes down. When that cost comes down, we'll be able to get homes at a more affordable price.
I did want to jump in about one thing you mentioned, and that was with early childhood education and working to lower the time on wait list. Can you offer some specifics on that? Because I'm sure. Curious how the state can do that.
First of all, it's interesting because if you read the news media, a lot of what you hear is my dissatisfaction with the direction that the president is taking our country in. In so many ways, you see what's going on in Minneapolis. We are working round the clock to make sure nothing like that ever happens in Delaware. At the same time, we have won a historic number of competitive federal grants. This is quite frankly in collaboration with the federal government to address concerns that Delawareans have. That includes an $157 million competitive grant award we won, the largest competitive grant award won in Delaware history. And I also mentioned it because we won an $11 million award in early child care. There are three components to our early child care funding plan that I talked about today. One is an increase in purchase of care resources, $25 million, which will increase what we can pay providers for the services they provide, which should at least make working at a health at an early child care provider more attractive and potentially address some of the staffing shortages they have and enable them to eliminate wait lists. The second is an $8 million direct investment from the general fund out of our budget to look at wait lists, those child care facilities in the higher need areas of our state where people don't have the, you know, hundreds of dollars, in some cases $1,000 a month to spend on child care, and doing what we can to help subsidize that to bring down wait lists. And the third is this federal grant that I referenced, which is going to further assist.
What a quick ask about the state employee pay raise, 2%. Mm-hmm. We've been talking a lot about affordability. Is 2% enough to help state employees with affordability? Did you consider more or consider doing what was done in the past sometimes, giving more to those on the lower end of the scale, the wage scale, as opposed to those on the upper
end? Yeah, you know, at the county, I did that. I started with our 459 employees, the local that did the blue collar work, who were the lowest paid employees. I brought them all up to back then $15 an hour. We had what they called compression, where you suddenly had some of our lower paid workers making more than their supervisors. And so what we found is we actually had to shift
So it's better to go just across the board
just
than to
address
try
to... cost. Well, it's not, to be clear, it's not just like 2% everyone across the board. There are different categories mm-hmm. of workers. What we do in every job specification is we work to make sure that we're compensating people so that the best choose to stay when they look at the competitive marketplace, and when we're recruiting, and it's an attractive job that people want to come to.
Is that 2% number, do you feel comfortable with that? Did you consider more?
I think I always want to pay people more. You always want to, especially when costs are rising, you always want to pay whatever organization I run, you always want to pay people more to be able to attract and retain the best talent possible. We think 2% starts to get us there. I'm sure we can find specific offices and situations where it's not enough and others where it's plenty.
You know, you talk about the $157 million for rural health care, and you know, the fund is, you know, over the next 5 years, and even if we got the whole $1 billion that we were asking for in the application, aren't we still losing $4 billion that we would have gotten if they hadn't signed the one big, beautiful bill?
Yeah, that's a good point, Sarah. I think if you look at the numbers nationally, we're based on, there's, you know, differing numbers on all sorts of stuff related to healthcare and the healthcare changes in the big bill, House Resolution 1 last year, the federal act. Numbers I've seen is something in the neighborhood of $2 trillion of federal assistance being taken out of Americans' pockets in terms of lost Affordable Care Act subsidies, changes to Medicaid, and some other changes, to the point that when they were in final discussions on the drafting the bill, people said, we're going to lose a sizable percentage of our rural health care system. So because of this $2 trillion loss, they created this $50 billion fund. $50 billion, $2 trillion, that's $2.5 billion, I think it's 2.5% of $2 trillion, if my math is right.
You're a math teacher.
Yeah, I'm a math teacher. 50 billion is two and a half. So yes, when you are, the premise of your question, I agree with it, Sarah. You're saying that there's $157 million a year. It's going to, you know, we think we're going to end up with something like $780 million. For Delaware, it's a huge amount of money. But is that really treating Delaware fairly? No. The best thing we should do, and I hear this from my wife just about every day, we need to get our health care system right in our country. And so what we're trying to do is kind of put a Band-Aid on a system that's not really working and patch it up with Band-Aids. I just say in the situation we're in leading Delaware, we're going to have the best system we possibly can, given the constraints of losing something like $2 trillion as a result of House Resolution 1.
Okay, that was lively and fun.
Sorry, a lot of numbers. It's budget day. I can't help myself.
Yes. Okay, we are at the rapid fire portion mm-hmm. of our show. So
I'm not, to be clear, just when the question comes, I've decided not to accept the position of offensive coordinator of the Eagles. I like the guy they have, Mannion. He'll be good.
Hope so. Okay, so the first question. This question relates to the Reading Consortium's vote to create a consolidated Newcastle County School District. This is the most expensive option. And Maddie asks, with families already struggling from energy costs surging as well as increased county and school taxes, where specifically is the money going to come from other than directly raising taxes?
Yeah, so what Maddie, I think it is, mm-hmm. what Maddie is referencing is that several decades ago, there was a recognition that students in the city of Wilmington were not getting what residents of the city of Wilmington, a lot of educational advocates believe is an adequate education. There have been a number of commissions and consortiums put together over the years, and a number of those have focused on redistricting. The most recent iteration, the Reading Consortium, I believe has been in existence for something like 5 years. They recently voted on a recommendation to which was, quite frankly, the most bold recommendation, to take all the districts in northern Newcastle County, with the exception of the VoTech district and excluding the Appaquinimic right. district, which is in southern Newcastle.
To make it one big district.
There is a report that was done very quickly mm-hmm. that said this is the most expensive mm-hmm. option. The next step in this Reading Consortium recommendation is for the recommendation to go before the State Board of Education. We expect that to be a thoughtful process. My view is that when you consolidate districts, it can be done irresponsibly and create a lot of harm and leave a lot of gaps, and actually in the end result really hurt students in the city of Wilmington. It can hurt lower income students, or it can be done thoughtfully, methodically, in a way that doesn't just benefit students, doesn't just benefit
but
the most vulnerable,
an idea
but also saves
how
money.
To pay for it
can be done. I mean, it can be done in a way that saves money. So what we're doing is we're looking forward to the State Board of Education and there being a lot more sort of meat put on the bone, if you will, so that we understand what does that actually mean if we do this. How will it be done? What opportunities does it create? I mean, to be frank, Shirley, just absolutely frank. Today, and I have two kids in Brandywine School District, right? They didn't go to school today. Mm-hmm. They didn't go to school yesterday. They didn't go to school the day before that.
They're not going tomorrow.
They're not going tomorrow, right? They're doing, I think, asynchronous. And that's actually true of every school district in Newcastle County. I and many people have had to go to work for yeah. most or all of this week and been able to. I think if there's more consolidated leadership, it potentially, done right, could create opportunities and efficiencies okay. that we don't even realize.
We only have a couple minutes left, so I want to get to a few more questions. A lot of folks writing about the response to the major snowfall. Mm-hmm. What is DLDOT doing to improve maintenance of secondary roads?
Right. So,
because some of the lanes are not fully
so planned. I get a daily report. Many of the roads now that is causing school districts to be closed and workplaces and people, quite frankly, to have difficulty just getting their car out daily. Days after the snowstorm has ended, are on roads that are not within DLDOT's jurisdiction. So I encourage you, first of all, if you have a situation where you believe it needs to be taken care of, it's long past due, please send me an email with your address or the address of the issue, matthew.meyer@delaware.gov. I want to hear about it. We will get to it and we will address it. And quite frankly, I had a meeting with DLDOT a few hours ago where I told them I don't care about jurisdictional lines anymore. If it's in the city of Wilmington, which is a place we traditionally don't plow, if it's in neighborhoods, which we typically don't plow, let's go and try to fix the problem.
Okay. All right. I wish we had gotten to a few more rapid fire questions. We'll have to do better next time, Governor, but we are going to have to leave it there. It has been a lively discussion. So thank you to all of the audience members who participated. Governor Matt Meyer of Delaware, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Shelley. This is fun.
Thank you also to Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne and WHYY News reporter Sarah Mueller.
Thanks for having us.
Ask Governor Meyer is produced by Hazel Mae Bryan with help from Paige Murray Bessler. Tina Kalikay and Adam Staniszewski are our technical engineers. Thank you to Delaware Public Media's Thomas Terry and Tom Interante. Kevin McCrory is our executive producer. WHYY's news director is Mark Eichmann. Joan Isabella is our audio general manager. I'm Shirley Min. Thank you so much for joining us. The next episode of Ask Governor Meyer happens live on February 26th, same time, same place. Join us from 8 to 9 p.m. WHYY-FM and on Delaware Public Media and streaming online on WHYY.org and on WHYY's YouTube channel and Facebook. Up next, The Middle with Jeremy Hobson is live talking ICE and what the action in Minnesota means for democracy.